And KiwiBuild, which is the government's program to build or deliver 100,000 homes in 10 years, is a massive distraction from fixing the housing problem. That's according to a new research report out today. Dr. Bryce Wilkinson, a senior research fellow for the New Zealand Initiative and author of this report, joins us. Good evening, Dr. Wilkinson.
Good evening, Karen.
Your report today, which was called KiwiBuild, Twyford's Tar Baby, and it was about basically wanting decisive action on red tape and get rid of KiwiBuild.
Take decisive action on red tape and not let KiwiBuild, if they could, distract them, the public servant, from that preoccupation.
So explain why it's a distraction, KiwiBuild, in the first instance.
Well, the crucial thing is to reduce the cost of houses across the board for private developers and buyers and for government alike. KiwiBuild is just about government building and commissioning houses, and it's not about reducing prices and costs across the board. So what's required for that is general measures to increase land supply on the one hand, and general measures to reduce the cost of building a house on the other hand.
Can they not go side by side?
They can occur in tandem, and the government to a degree is doing that. But the problem with KiwiBuild, why it represents a massive distraction, is because it's an ongoing source of potential political embarrassment. And politicians don't like being embarrassed, so they like to put a lot of resources and attention into avoiding that. Now, the nature of the embarrassment is pretty well intractable. It's built into KiwiBuild. On the one hand, only relatively well-off first-home buyers can afford a KiwiBuild home. So if you subsidise them, it's very hard to justify the subsidies. And that's the embarrassment the government incurred recently in the Papakura development, which was the first one. On the other hand, if it's not subsidised and the government says its intention is not to subsidise, then there's no obvious case for government to be building houses, because private developers exist to meet buyer demand at an unsubsidised price. And the risk with government commissioning houses is that it builds them in the wrong place, or in designs which buyers don't really want. So when it puts them on the market at the cost of building them, it finds no buyers or insufficient buyers. And the government's already incurred that embarrassment in the case of Wanaka.
Yes, what happened in Wanaka?
Well, Wanaka is not South Auckland. It's quite a wealthy area with tourists and the like. Less the case than Queenstown, in fact. So property prices are very high there, and the demand's not as strong as close to Auckland, and particularly the demand for smaller scale houses. And that's the difficulty when the government sort of overriding buyer preferences and telling developers what houses it wants them to build on those sections, is it might just miss the market. It just doesn't have strong, politicians don't have strong commercial incentives.
Are they still unsold, those homes in Wanaka?
I don't know.
And in Papakura, and when you say it was an embarrassment on equity grounds, can you explain that?
Yes, well, the media gave a lot of attention at the time to how relatively well off the successful couple were, well educated and with good careers in front of them. And also, they made it clear that they considered the success in the ballot as giving them a significant windfall gain. So, you know, the question, as one newspaper headline said, this looks like socialism for the rich. People who are already at the top end of the buyer's market are getting a substantial bonus. And the equity question is, well, what about all the people who missed out on the ballot, or couldn't get a bank finance to participate in the ballot in the first place. Why were they less deserving?
So with KiwiBuild and the promise to deliver 100,000 homes in a decade, what comment have you got to make on that number?
Well, it's a number out of thin air, isn't it?
Seems to be, yes.
Yeah, but it's of dubious achievability. But given the constraints on capacity in the industry, but the question our report looks at is, well, what would it be likely to achieve? Now, it could materially make a difference to the affordability problem if it really increased the supply of houses available for New Zealanders to live in. So the report looks into that and comes to the conclusion that one has to be pessimistic about that unless it's accompanied by effective measures to increase land supply and reduce housing costs across the board.
So this is your solution. Those two factors, two things you need to build a house, that's somewhere to build it and a bit of land, and you need someone to build it for you. So is this where we're talking about the red tape?
Yes, that's right. And in the report, I cite some statistics from an Auckland economist, Rodney Dickens, that median section prices in Auckland reportedly rose 903%. That's massive in the 25 years between 1993 and 2018. That actually dwarfed the rise in construction cost per square meter during the same period, which was 232%, so only a quarter of as much. But that 212% was more than twice as fast as the rise in the consumer price index. So it's a twofold problem. Most of all, with a artificial shortage of land, but secondly, with regulations putting up construction costs and limiting construction options. The industry could build at lower cost if they were allowed to build upwards, for example, or use prefabricated stuff more often. So there's a lot of the industry could build more cheaply if government policies and local authority planning rules permitted it to do so.
Are you talking specifically Auckland or nationwide here?
We cite both figures. The problems of the demographic surveys are greatest in Auckland, Tauranga and Queenstown. But the New Zealand average, of course, Auckland has such a high population weight, the New Zealand average is high too. So there's a lot of diversity across the country, and it's partly related to different rates of population growth.
So when you're talking about decisive action on red tape, we're looking at individual councils here, but let's target specifically Auckland, where the greater population is.
Yeah,
and
that's right, Karen.
How likely is it that some of the points that you've raised in this report might be followed up on by local government?
I think it's significant because it's a real concern, and in the report we give the Minister of Housing credit that he's fully aware of this. He's trying to make action on it. We'd love to see him making faster and more decisive action, but it's not entirely a central government problem. It is an Auckland Council problem as well, and part of the problem there is this NIMBYism thing, that no one wants a high-rise apartment building next door to their backyard.
I would have thought, though, with the absolute need to get people into accommodation, that they would be ticking the box when it came to high-rise. Or is it coming from those, as you say, that are going to be living next door to it, who are complaining so much that it just isn't getting done?
I think that's a lot, the politics of it. And another facet to it is that when one talks about enabling the industry to get the readier access to land and been building and building up and the like, there's people who are already well off and owning houses worth $1 million more in Auckland. They don't want to think that those house prices could fall. So policies to increase landing supply can seem a bit threatening to people who are already doing very well, thank you, or think they are. They feel wealthier than they are actually with the high property values.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Wilkinson. Appreciate your time tonight.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity.
And that's Dr. Bryce Wilkinson. He's a senior fellow with the New Zealand Initiative. And it's now 28 minutes after 10, and New Zealand businesses.